Good morning. It is very good to be with you here this morning. I bring to you greetings from your brethren in Hawaii. Annie and I took an impromptu vacation this last week and a half, and we got to spend about 5 nights with Alex and Leah Hess. They were members here for 3 years, and they now live in Hawaii, and they're doing great. They send you their love. We returned from Hawaii only a few hours ago, so I do not have a whole lot of sleep in my body right now. And this time of the year is usually when people start to compromise on their New Year's resolutions. And one of those things that I was trying to pursue is not drinking any more coffee. From, as you guys remember, things in January with some health concerns and stuff, one of the things we stepped away from was coffee. And but kind of like in an emergency, you have things behind like a glass thing on the wall, break in case of an emergency. Well, this morning I had a delicious cup of coffee. So you have a sleepy, caffeinated preacher this morning. But I'm thrilled to be here. It's an exciting time to be back. And I'm thrilled to equip you for good work through God's word. This morning's lesson, I want to start with a question, and that is, what kind of person do you want to be? Again, this is the time of the year when people's resolutions start to fade away. I want us to take a moment and contemplate, not just this year, but for this life, what kind of person do you want to be? This year is shaping out to be, can't think of a better way to say it, a very loud year, a very noisy year, in the sense that there's a lot of things clamoring for our attention. This is going to be, on a cultural level, a very politically charged year. With the things going on with the coronavirus, there's a lot of clamoring for our attention and anxiety to be put and designated towards this. There's a lot of noise. It's going to be a loud year looking for our attention, for us to be something, to draw lines politically, to be a certain level of anxiety and intensity and immediacy towards world events. It's going to be a very loud year. We need to think, what kind of people are we going to be in this tumultuous, loud year of 2020? There is a strategy Satan often employs in that he desires us to have the focus, our focus, our attention, our devotion, to be on things out there for the problems we face, to be with people we've never met before, to be concerned about other people's moral failings, to think that the things we should combat against are a broken system and rebel against people and ideas that are large and bigger than ourselves. And in doing so, it distracts us from the question of, well, what are you doing with your life? This virus this new virus coming from Asia is certainly something we should understand or seek to understand and to be wise about. When I was on the plane this morning, somebody was coughing behind me and I couldn't help but think like, oh no. It's something, it's okay to be mindful of certain things. We should seek to be wise, but I should be a lot more concerned about the disease within me spiritually that I could have than a bodily harm I could receive from a physical virus. The things that come out of this body are far worse potentially than the things that could go into this body. And making sure we have an attitude of, I should be concerned about this virus, sure, but I should be much more concerned about my spiritual health and the things that are happening within me spiritually. You know, politics is not in itself an evil thing, but when politics becomes the very focus of our minds. It's far, far worse than the circumstances politics are created to seek to correct. So what type of people are we going to be? Are we going to be in tribes and factions? Are we going to be wrapped up in anxiety? Or, as the passage that was just read for us by Paul, are we going to be holy, like God is holy? That is what God calls us to be. He calls us to be holy as he is holy. And so 1 Peter 1, 13 through 16 is our core passage for this morning. To be holy as God is holy. Holiness means set apart. It means designated for a specific purpose. Christians, out of all of humanity, will always be the minority. Jesus says that broad is the path that leads to destruction, narrow is the way that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Several years ago, I was working with a fellow AIM coordinator, and he was a missionary in Ukraine, he still is. And we were talking, and we were looking up at the night sky in Texas, and we noticed that the majority of the night sky is black. But he made a great point in that nobody looks up at the night sky and says, wow, look at all that blackness. What they end up focusing on is these little points of light. The minority of the sky is light, and yet that is what people focus on and dwell on. And in this world that's getting noisier and louder, and this culture is becoming more and more tumultuous, there's no better time for the church to be holy and to be a light to the world that is set apart and different from everything else around it. There's nothing else like the church. There's nothing else like God's people. There's nothing else like the holiness of God to which we are supposed to also be a part of. So we are supposed to be set apart just like a star in the sky. We are to be designated for a specific purpose. In this passage in 1 Peter, we also see that we're not just trying to be holy, we're trying to be holy as he is holy. So God sets the standard with himself as to what holiness is to be. Because we can very easily think ourselves holy. We can very easily consider ourselves spiritual, religious, and pat ourselves on the back and meet man's expectations on what piety or virtue could be. But when you see in the culture, especially that emphasizes a postmodern ideas of truth is relative and you do what you think is right, that sounds very, very familiar to when Israel is at its worst points. When you look at the judges, you look at moments of their history in the Old Testament, there's this phrase that repeats itself when Israel is at its worst, and it's when every man did what was right in their own eyes. So here we see in this understanding of holiness that God sets the standard for what holiness is, not man. And so when we're looking to be holy, that's not to our understanding or our expectation or what other people find acceptable. We need to be holy as God sets the standard as for what is holy. So being holy as he is holy, is that possible? Is it possible to be holy as God is holy? Can you with confidence say, I am as holy as God is? Can you say that with confidence? It sounds arrogant. It sounds uncomfortable. It seems impossible. It seems like wishful thinking. But is God calling us into something that's impossible? Is he inviting us, directing us into something that cannot be done? We're going to look at some similar passages that they do seem impossible. But just like Jesus explaining the rich man entering into the kingdom of heaven, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. But then he goes on to say that with what is impossible with man is possible with God. And through God, we can be holy like he is. So we're going to look at a few other passages that have similar, seemingly impossible commands to obey, but through God they are doable. The first one is John 17, 20 through 21, if you want to turn there. This is Jesus praying for us. And he says in his prayer, he says, Father, I don't pray for just these who, I don't pray for these only who, but those who believe in me through their word, talking about the apostles. And he's praying then that just as you, Father, am me and I am in you, that they may also be in us, or that the world may believe that you have sent me. And he compares the unity that he has with God to then saying it's that level that he desires unity amongst us and God together. And that just as you are with me and I am in you, that they might be in us, that is an extraordinarily high standard of unity. How close is Jesus and the Father? How unified are they? And Jesus desires then and prays for us to have that level of connection. Is that doable? Or is that wishful thinking? Is it impossible to have that level of unity that Jesus is praying for? Or is Jesus in this moment just being whimsical or wishful? Now, I believe that what Jesus is praying for is doable, is able to be fulfilled. Ephesians 5:25, we're told that husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. Is it possible, as a husband, to love your spouse just as Christ loved the church? That seems such a lofty, lofty concept of love. Almost seems unattainable. I'm not God. I'm not perfect. How can I do this? We're hopefully going to have a marriage seminar next summer with a good friend of ours that's going to be coming up and speaking. And something that they talk about that I find really inspiring is that nobody's marriage is perfect. You should not be consistently or just constantly angry and upset that your marriage is not perfect and flawless. But what you should strive for is not to have just a perfect marriage, but to have perfect moments in that marriage. Think about it this way. Has somebody ever stepped into your life, encouraged you or challenged you, and you recognized that that is just the way Jesus would have handled it? Where somebody blessed you, that they helped you grow, and they treated you just like Jesus would. I know looking into my life, some people have impacted me in that way, and they acted just like Jesus in that moment. And so I recognize, wow, it is possible for someone to do what Jesus would do. We used to ask that question all the time when we were kids, what would Jesus do? It's possible to do what Jesus would do in a moment. But then we get uncomfortable thinking, okay, can I do just what Jesus would do? And we put ourselves down into this place of, I'm not capable of being like Jesus. We put ourselves in this position of, I'm not good. I want to be holy. I'm going to try to be holy, but I know that I'm not always holy. Well, what God is looking for, what he is calling us into, is for looking for moments of being holy, of moments of being like Jesus. We all stumble and fall in many ways. But he's calling us to strive for that holiness. I think the passage that explains it best is, let's turn now there to 1 John 3, looking through verses 1 through 10. 1 John 3, 1 through 10. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called the children of God. And so we are. Just pause there for a moment. You are children of God. Do you know how you're children of God? Because God has said you're children of God. If Jesus was to appear visibly right here, and he was to say, you are my child, do you get to argue with him? You'd be like, excuse me, Jesus, I don't really feel like your child. So I don't think I really am. I think you're wrong. Do we get to do that? Read that again. See what kind of love the Father has given us that we should be called the children of God. Could have just ended right there in the next part of the passage continue. But then there's this part right here for our, I think, struggling of accepting this very uncomfortable truth. And so we are. And so we are. Because God has said so. He has given us this love to be his children. And it's not up for debate. If he says you're holy, you can't say, no, I'm not. Because he's the standard for what holiness is. So when he steps into our world and says, I have loved you, I have made you holy, it's not up for debate. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. And now in verse 2, beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. You know that he appeared in order to take away sins, and in him there is no sin. No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Now listen to this. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous. And how righteous is that person? As he is righteous. Did you hear that? Whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him, and he cannot keep on sinning because he has been born of God. By this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. The reason I bring this passage up in this lesson is to show that whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. And the key word here for this lesson is practice. Is practice. I played soccer through first grade through 12th grade when I was in school, and my school didn't have a basketball program. All we really had was soccer. But when I was a sophomore, we then had a basketball program start, and I decided that looked really fun. My friends were playing, so I joined the team. And we were awful. We were terrible. We didn't win a single game our first year. I didn't score a single point my first year. But we practiced, and we ended up getting better and better and better. And then our senior year, we ended up going to state, and we got second, and it was really exciting. It was fun times. But there was times, there's this really embarrassing moment, especially my senior year, where we had a senior night, and we had this game, and it was recorded for all time, where everybody took home to this the senior game. And I took this three-point shot, and I just airballed it. It was just really, really bad. And if all games to just really, really airball, that's the most embarrassing moment. So at that moment, after I did that, I just missed the mark. I missed the goal. I knew what I was trying to do, and I just really whiffed it. Did I just go sit down the bench and say, well, I'm done. I can't do this. You know, that terrible shot, I scored some points that game. That was a whole lot better than when we first started in the sophomore year. When you're practicing something, sometimes you mess up. But as you practice, you get better at it, and you get better and better and better. When we're seeking to be like Jesus, when we're practicing to be like him, then we are like him, is what this passage is saying. It's not about being perfect in every single thing. It's in pursuing this. And early in 1 John, this walking in the light concept. If you're going in that direction, then you're cleansed from all unrighteousness and cleansed from all sin. If you're walking with him, if you are practicing this. So we are to be holy as he is holy. We're to be practicing this righteousness, and in practicing him and trying to be holy like him, we are holy like him because he has said so, even if we don't feel like it. I look in the mirror, I look at that video of that basketball game, like, oh no, that was so bad. I look at my life and I look at times where I sinned or I did something that was not, it was just wrong, and it's embarrassing, but then I know, but I'm trying, I'm practicing it, and I know that I am righteous because I'm practicing righteousness like him. He's the standard. This isn't me becoming righteousness out of my own works, but he has said that if you practice this, if you try to be like me, then to me you are like me. And that's something that there's freedom in that. I want to look at also a similar way. In Ephesians 5:1 says, as beloved children, we are to be imitators of God. Imitators of God. So God is this holy, uncreated one, master of the universe, and we are to imitate him. He is holy, and we're seeking to be holy like him. So what are we to imitate about him? Because God of the universe and Mike Katkus seem really unrelatable in a lot of ways. At least it feels like it. So how am I supposed to imitate the eternal God? What about him am I to imitate? Well, I think it starts with 1 Timothy 2:4 that we see that God desires all people to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. So the mission of God, the heart of God, of desiring all people to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth, it starts with adopting that, just like Jesus teaches us how to pray, that your will be done on heaven as it is, done on earth as it is in heaven. So taking on the mentality of God, the goals of God, we start with imitating that. But then what does God do? What are the actions of God that we can imitate? What about his holiness can we practice in being, and about his righteousness that we can practice? I see in 1 John 2:1 that Jesus is an advocate, that when we sin, he is an advocate for us. That's something that we can imitate. When we can be an advocate for humanity, when people are struggling, with sin, we can step into their life and advocate for them and to speak for them and say, look, there's still hope. There's this good news. There is this Savior, Jesus. We see in 1 Timothy 2:5 that Jesus is a mediator, the only mediator between God and man. But we're also told that we are priests, in that we are a kingdom of priests, and that we help connect people to Christ, to God. We introduce them to God. We help build that bridge. We see in Matthew 7:11 that God is a good gift giver. He's a good father. He's a provider. Likewise, we can imitate that and provide good things for people around us. We see that Jesus is a protector in Matthew 16:23, where he tells Peter to get behind me, Satan. We see him clean out the temple. We see him standing up for truth and protecting the truth. We can imitate him in doing such things. We see him as a healer. He heals so many times in so many ways. The time that stands out to me is when the woman was caught in adultery and she was about to be executed. And Jesus proclaims in John 8, the one who is without sin cast the first stone. And they eventually all trickle away, starting with the oldest. And then he speaks life to this woman and says, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more. And he brought healing, spiritual healing, to this person. We can do very much the same thing. We see Jesus is purposeful. In Luke 9:51, he sets his face to Jerusalem. We see Luke 14, he tells us to take up our cross and follow him, that Jesus was on a mission. We imitate him in that and following him, taking up our cross and following him. We see that Jesus is prayerful. In Hebrews 5:7, that he was in the days of his flesh, through tears and loud cries, he prayed and cried out to God and was heard because of his reverence. That we can imitate God in our prayerfulness. Now turn with me to Romans 9:23. This challenges me greatly. Where we imitate God, it's possible to imitate God in our sacrifice. Paul is speaking at this moment, Romans 9:3, and he says something so profound that I wrestle with this level of sacrificial love. Romans 9:3. For I wish that I myself were accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers, my kinsmen, according to the flesh. Paul is a Jew, and what he just said there is, I wish I could be accursed, cut off from Christ, so that my brethren, my fellow Jews, would have a connection to Christ. You see, my treasure that's laid up in heaven, my citizenship there, my personal relationship with God, this love from God that nothing can separate me from, is such a precious and personal, eternal thing that I've latched onto, and it's mine. But the thought of loving someone so much that's to think, I wish I could give this to you, and I go to hell in your place. I mean, that type of substitutional love, that sacrificial love, that's hard for me to comprehend. But you look at Jesus who emptied himself. You look at Jesus who goes to the cross and goes through something we can't totally comprehend of crying out to God, why have you forsaken me? But this idea of, I'll take your place. That's a kind of love. This, we talk about unconditional love, but this sacrificial love of, I wish I could take your place. I've never thought that before, where I look at someone who doesn't know Jesus and say, I wish you could have my place. I wish we could swap places. But we see Jesus enduring things and going through a sacrificial love where he gives up himself, and we see Paul wishing this, and it's such an extreme love. But isn't God's love extreme? Isn't God's love without measure? And I find myself wanting to hoard my spot in heaven, my place prepared for me. And I am challenged by, if I'm looking to be holy as he's holy, if I want to imitate my father as a beloved child, what's my father doing? How did he love in giving up his son in this sacrifice? It's a challenging thought, and it's pushing me way outside my comfort zone. We also see attributes, character, holiness of God demonstrated in Christ in his servanthood. In John 13:14, he's washing the disciples' feet, and he says, go and do likewise. So we can imitate Jesus in his humble service. We see Jesus constantly forgiving people on his way to the cross and him saying, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing, to him teaching us how to pray and saying, Father, you know, forgive us of our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. We can imitate God in our forgiveness towards others. So in conclusion to this lesson, in looking to be holy as he is holy, we need to be in this world, and in this country, this nation that we're in, is going to be a very political year. It's going to be a year filled with sorts of things that causes rises of concern. How are we going to be in this world? Because we're told to be in this world. We're told to go into all the nations making disciples, not just retreating from all the nations and hoping that they come to us. We're told to go out. It's very similar to a ship going out to sea, that the ship is in the ocean, but the ocean isn't in the ship. The ship has a structure to it where it is able to be buoyant and be able to travel. But if water starts getting into the ship, there's a really, really, really big problem. And pretty soon the ship is now at the bottom of the ocean. You and I are in this world, but we have to be careful that this world doesn't get in us. We have to be holy in this world. We have to be those stars in the night sky. And we're only able to do so because of the holiness of God. who that holy God then makes us holy. Not by our own merit, not by our achievements, but he has created a way through his Son for us to be the holy people of God. So this message this morning is, who are you going to be? Are you going to be this year primarily political or anxious or self-centered? Are we going to be timid? Are we going to be anything else other than holy? And this message is a challenge, is a time to reflect of what are we supposed to be doing with our lives? What are we supposed to be focused on? What are we supposed to be excited about? I don't know what's all going to happen this year, but I know that God has called us to be holy. And that's something we can do. We can do it because of who he is. So let's be a ship that's in the ocean and not a sinking ship. Let's make sure that we are in this world as the holy people of God, and not let the world come into our hearts, but for the light that God has put into our hearts be extraordinarily bright in this world. So with that in mind, let's stand and sing this next song that's been selected.